Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. My name is Colleen Dietz. Join me and my guests each week for an entertaining recap of the hottest topics in Mormonism. We keep tabs on social media and headline news so you don't have to. Don't miss our live pro tips as you adjust to your new and exciting post-Mormon life. Mormon Happy Hour is here to bring you the irreverent side of Mormonism, wherever you may be. Welcome to another bonus episode. 41. I do apologize. I still have a cold. Please forgive me. So I traded interviews with my friend Karen Peter, who is the president of the Fifth Quorum of the 70s of the Community of Christ. You may be more familiar with their former name, which is the RLDS Church, which is the church that Emma Smith continued with her son Joseph Smith III following the death of Emma's husband Joseph Smith. I know you know who he is. So today I'm sharing with you the interview that Karen and I did in the Mormon Happy Hour sound booth at Sunstone this summer. I want to be real with you for just a minute and share with you that I love the Community of Christ. I really do. And at the moment, going to church isn't really where I'm at, and I don't know if I ever will be there again. But if a sense of community and a real good spirituality done right is something that I'm craving, then the Community of Christ is where I'm going to go. And after this episode and a link to an episode of Lindsay Hansen Park's Year of Polygamy, I will throw into the show notes for you. I hope that you understand why I feel that way. They adopted the name Community of Christ because the emphasis is really on building a community where all are welcome at the table. No one is expected to be the same. Uniqueness and authenticity are honored and cultivated. I know, it sounds crazy. Why would I recommend a religion at all, much less one that resembles Mormonism, if at least in a shadow? But just listen. Hear him out. I think you'll be surprised at how right it feels after everything that we have experienced leaving what we know as Mormonism. I will also be sharing a link to the interview that I did with Karen regarding my experiences with sexual assault and ecclesiastical abuse within the Mormon faith, which is up now on the Community of Christ podcast called Project Zion. So please enjoy my moment at Sunstone with Karen Peter.
Say we don't consider ourselves Mormon. There are some people in Community of Christ who would embrace that term, but most people would say no. Mormon, that's the people that went out to Utah.
So the Brighamite Clan, those are Mormons.
The Brighamite Clan and Community of Christ comes from the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We are not Mormon. That's our name.
Emma?
Yes.
So Emma is your roots.
Emma, well, Joseph Smith III was the first prophet president.
Which is her son.
Yes.
Okay.
And Joseph Smith's son.
Okay.
Yes.
So the blood son of the two of them.
Yes. So we call ourselves Team Emma because we like her. And at our Project Zion podcast booth over here, you can get an Emma Smith mug or t-shirt with my favorite Emma Smith quote on it, which is, I have been called apostate, but I have never apostatized nor forsaken the faith I at first accepted. And I like it because she was doing a dig at Brigham Young. So I find her fascinating.
She's feisty.
She was feisty and she was compassionate. When you think of everything that she went through in her life with being married to Joseph Smith, moving, being uprooted on a regular basis, not knowing where your husband was, what was going on, and yet she lived this life of taking people in who didn't have homes and taking children in that didn't have parents and caring for sick people, and she lived her life like that. It's like, how can you not love her? Yeah. So we claim her
love
as
that.
Our heritage.
Love
yeah.
That.
So we don't consider ourselves Mormon, although when I'm with Lindsay,
she does.
And she will say things, and she'll say, well, you know, the different things of Mormon, and we kind of, I don't cringe anymore. I used to kind of, but I don't anymore. Because I was raised being taught I was not Mormon. Those people are Mormon.
I get it. So it was a separation thing, a deliberate separation.
Very much.
I get that.
Yeah. Okay. And I don't think you heard me say the name of the church I grew up in. Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We are not Mormon. That was how I was taught to say what
the
church I went to. Yeah.
It's fascinating for me coming from I was raised in the Brighamite clan, and I was raised to say most of that just without some of the caveats here and there.
Right.
And I know how religiously devoted I was taught to be. And so it's interesting to hear that's exactly how the other side of the mirror, basically, you were being raised the same way. And I'm like, oh, that's so interesting that here I thought I was the only one.
Oh no.
But we're not.
I was taught that, that Mormons were the great abomination.
Which is what I was taught about you.
Because we were the one and only true church, right? And I remember in high school, my best friend was Lutheran, and her dad was a Lutheran pastor. Uh-huh. And she asked me one time, so I don't understand your church. My dad says that you're a works-based church. And I didn't have any theological underpinnings to help me process
I just
that.
Learned that, within the past couple of months. The difference between works-based
and grace-based. And she said, we're grace-based, you're works-based. And I said, no, we're not. We're the one and only true church. That was my answer.
Because we don't know.
With no theological anything. So now that I have gone to seminary, and seminary in Community of Christ is a graduate program.
Oh, cool.
And so now
it's,
that I've done
legit.
That, I can have the conversation.
Now, would you consider yourself grace-based or works-based?
I would consider us grace-based, but with this caveat. So I had a professor, and he's actually on Project Zion all the time, Tony Shavala Smith, and he would say, grace gets you in as far as the whole Christian realm. Grace gets you in, but works keep you in. Mm-hmm. And what he means by that is that you have to have a balance of belief and faith in action. Mm-hmm. One without the other is simply not sufficient.
And I, like I said, I just kind of really delved into this grace-based, works-based, and it's a great theological debate between where your motivation lies to do your actions and to live your life, and where your morality comes from. And so if I'm listening to the argument, I sway towards the grace-based because it feels more genuine, whereas works-based feels more compelled.
Well, and it becomes that way because we're human.
Right.
Right. And so the whole idea of grace, as I have lived it kind of in my understanding, and the tradition is you can't earn it, right? Mm-hmm. It's God's gift to all of creation. And my belief is it's God's gift to all of creation, not Christians.
Right. Mormons.
Not Mormons, not even humans, but God's grace to all of creation. Mm-hmm. And we live and abide in that, and we can choose whether or not we want to look at that or how we want to explore it. But it's simply there. It's what we swim in as part of God's creation. So it's when we try to say somebody is in God's grace and somebody's outside of God's grace that I get a little uppity.
Right, because you can't be outside of God's grace. So what you were saying about your teacher, about how God's grace is how you get in, and then works is how you stay in. That's where I get the human element.
It's how you live it out. It's what you do to show that you are responding to God's grace.
And we as humans, we need to actually physically do work in order to basically gain a testimony ourselves. We need to show work for ourselves. And so that's how I kind of see it differently now.
Okay, to be involved in something to show that we are responding.
Yeah, the work isn't for God. Right. The work is for yourself. Okay. And so now I have a lot less hang up for works-based, because I believe in grace plus work for yourself.
So if works is tied to getting into heaven,
that is not
something that I would get behind.
So I think,
same kind of thing, that we exhibit our understanding that God is present in our life by what we do with others and for others, right, and for God's creation.
And that even the motivation for that work comes from grace.
It's us responding,
right,
to what God has already done.
Which is that, I mean, that's the basis for grace theology.
Yeah. So do you always have these
no
avid theological conversations here on Mormon Happy Hour?
Never.
No?
Speaking of, maybe I should introduce you and do the, now that we're like 20 minutes in, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have my sacrament shot tray.
I see that.
So
it's empty. I just want to clarify that for anybody, Community Christ, listening to this.
So I think the answer is going to be no. But I have my bag of goodies over here, if you'd like.
No, my beverage of choice is Diet Coke. I just have to be honest.
I already interviewed Christina Rossetti today and she cleaned me out of Diet Coke.
She would do that. Yeah. That's true. People who know me best would say actually espresso goes first and then Diet Coke. But it's hot down here.
Yeah.
So
don't come. You already went to Arizona. I was going to say, don't come to Arizona.
I've been many times. Yeah. I come there quite often. We should have lunch or something.
Let's do it.
Okay.
For real.
Yeah, I'm serious. For the microphone.
Right.
Should really do it.
Okay. And then next, you can introduce yourself now that we've been chit-chatting.
Okay,
forever.
Now that we've done this. So I'm Karen Peter, mm-hmm. and I serve as a president of 70 in Community of Christ, mm-hmm. and I am president of the fifth quorum of 70. And we don't have the same progression of status in the 70 that okay. other traditions have. We are assigned in quorums by geography.
Okay.
And so the fifth quorum covers Eastern Washington State all the way to Chicago and down to Nauvoo, you might have heard of it, and across to Lamoni and then Salt Lake and
might have heard of it
and back up to Spokane, Washington. Yeah.
Wow, I used to live in Spokane.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. There's so many good things about you.
Thanks. Yeah. Oh, there's more good things about you.
Yeah.
So how many Quorum of the 70 members are there in the church?
So I don't even know how many 70 there are in the church. We have 9 quorums. We have 8 presidents of 70 right now. One of them serves 2 quorums. I couldn't tell you how many. Isn't that awful? I don't know the total.
I don't know
of that.
How many.
Let's say a couple hundred. Probably around 300.
Okay.
Maybe. I could be totally wrong. Don't quote me.
I have no idea how many Mormon Quorum of 70 there are.
I either. Would imagine that nobody listening to this could correct me. So let's just go with a couple hundred.
You are the voice of authority here.
I don't really know how many there are.
And also, it's very diverse, not only in gender, but in ethnicity. Like, I've just seen your individual quorum, a photo of all of you,
yes.
and I'm like, that's what diversity looks like.
I can't imagine where you saw that, but
it was posted somewhere.
Well, we do. I have colleagues on the Council of Presidents of 70 who come from Orissa, India.
Yes.
And that's Amson Malik. And John Glazer is Hispanic. And Adam Wade is Australian. So we have to give him a shout out there.
And even though he's white, he's not American.
No, he's not. And Tanawaswa is from Ivory Coast.
Wow.
So we do. John White is actually a descendant of Lyman White, another good Mormon history name, and he is the senior president. 70, Larry McGuire, Keith McMillan, and I kind of round out the council.
Keith McMillan.
Yeah, he's here somewhere. Okay. He's wandering around.
I met him in Phoenix, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's where the names sound familiar.
Yeah.
And then you have women. You're not the only woman.
I am on the Council of Presidents of 70 right now.
Oh,
we have
okay.
had other women.
Okay.
We do not have any other women on the council right now.
I
They're called according to the need at the moment. So Apostle Robin Linkhart, who's here,
mm-hmm.
she was a president of 70.
Okay.
And then Chris Judd, who is the staff pastor for Community of Christ, she was on the council the same time as
cool.
I was. Yeah.
Love
we have that. Female apostles, and we have a woman in the first presidency.
So obviously you ordain women.
We obviously do.
And how long have you been ordaining women?
Since the 1980s, 1984.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So I had left Community of Christ because mm-hmm. Some elder had made a friend of my father's who happened to be an elder in the church made a comment that someday I would make a fine helpmate to a priesthood member, and I
sounds familiar.
Thought that didn't sound okay. And I just kind of stopped participating in the life of the church. And so there was a period in my life when I would have happily participated in your bevy of goods that you have over there. But by the time I came back, the discussion was very much about ordaining women. It was right after that when that began to take place. So my mother was one of the first women in my area to be ordained.
Wow.
And she serves...
That's a legacy.
Yeah. She serves today as an Aaronic teacher. Mm-hmm. And she cooks for the homeless twice a week as part of her ministry.
Where does she live?
She lives in Puyallup, Washington. Hi,
yes.
Mom. Yeah. Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think. I have so many questions. So what brings you to Sunstone? What are you doing here?
Oh, so I enjoy coming to Sunstone. So first off, I come because this area is part of my assignment as part of...
Regionally,
geographically. Mm-hmm. And so I visit on a regular basis our congregation in Salt Lake and our house churches around the valley.
Okay.
And I come here in particular to meet people from the post-Mormon and transitioning Mormon community who have contacted Community of Christ or who have questions about Community of Christ and try to be as aware as I can of the issues that are causing people to choose to leave the LDS Church. And the only way to do that is to learn and listen.
And that's one thing that I love about the Community of Christ is that you are, and I was actually just over lunch today, I went and got lunch at Cafe Zupas, which is amazing. Have you ever eaten
Yes,
there?
I love Cafe Zupas. They're so good.
I've been in love with Cafe Zupas since 15 years ago when I was at Brigham Young University.
Oh, I just went my first time this week. It was so,
so good.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the girl, she's a girl, who made my lunch, she saw my name tag and asked what it's for, and so I said, oh, it's Sunstone. And she's like, what's that? And I've lived in Utah all my life, and I don't know what Sunstone is. And so I was like, well, it used to be it is a magazine. It's been around since, like, my parents were kids, forever. So I kind of went through...
I'm your parents' age. That kind of wounded me right there, but that's okay. Just saying.
But I love you. I'm sorry. So I was explaining to her, like, the spread of Mormonism. Where was I going with this? I just had a brain fart.
You were talking about why I come to Sunstone to learn, and you said that's what I love about Community of Christ is that you're related.
Oh, that's what it was. So I was telling her all the different types of groups that come, that it's a spectrum of, like, it's all of Mormonism.
Yeah.
And I was explaining how there were different sects of Mormonism. There was over 100, and that, you know, the Reorganized Church is what we grew up knowing it as, but it's now the Community of Christ, and of course she had heard of that. And so we were talking about that, and I was kind of telling her about the Community of Christ and kind of, like, how, you know, you still believe in the Book of Mormon and Joseph Smith, but you kind of take it in different...
We have a variety of ways people look at the Book of Mormon and understand its value or lack thereof in their spiritual formation.
Right. Mm-hmm. That it exists, it's scripture with caveats.
Yeah, it's one of our three standard books.
Right.
But we don't have a litmus test that says you have to believe this about it. So when someone asks me, do you believe in the Book of Mormon? My response is what you're asking me, what do I believe about the Book of Mormon? Because usually when someone says, do you believe in it? They're saying, do you believe in the story that it's an ancient text that was, you know, dug out of the ground by Joseph Smith and that it was in some kind of hieroglyphics? And is that what you're asking me, if I believe that? Or are you saying, do I believe there's value in the content of what's said? Because I do find there's value in there. I think there are some beautiful passages that speak to the inequity of wealth, imbalance of power, some of those issues that are important to me. I'm not as tied to the idea that it's a historical text of some kind.
Ancient.
And that's okay. In Community of Christ, some people see it as what it claims to be on its own, which is a text written in the mid-19th century that talks about the religious kind of ideas and controversies of the day. Could it be that? And is there value in it if you think of it that way? And some people around the church and Community of Christ simply don't choose to use it, and that's okay too.
Yeah, and I love that you can, regardless of the origin of your beliefs and its origin, you can still take value in it as a text, which... Yeah,
right.
Why not?
Right.
If there's value to be had, why not have it?
Yeah.
I love that. And I was explaining to her also that the Community of Christ is like, it's Mormonism, as if Mormonism adapted and actually made the changes it needed to make to be a wonderful church.
Like, well, I appreciate that.
That's how I feel. Like, you ordain women, you are accepting of the LGBTQ community. Like, you have boldly admitted as a community that, okay, yeah, there were mistakes made in our history. Mm-hmm. This is one, this is one, mm-hmm. this is one. Mm-hmm. But we're still going to find the good in it, and we're going to form a community based on the good that we have found.
Yeah.
And we're adaptive, and we will change when mistakes are made, and we'll be better.
Well, we're adaptive because we sense God is never done with us.
No.
Right? God's always calling us on this journey. We continue to journey with God. And the way that I describe it is that the people that set out across the Great Plains, right, to head west, not the Mormons, but just in general, people mm-hmm. heading west, we would pack everything in there. We'd pack our cast iron stove and grandma's bedstead and all, you know, everything, all our books, and we would set out across the plains. And and that might have worked for the flat part of the journey, but when you get to the mountains, that doesn't work so well.
Yeah.
And so you have to take some things that aren't necessary for the journey, even if you love them, mm-hmm. and you have to set them down on the side of the trail.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Then you can get over the mountain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what we've had to do. We've had to set some things aside that people were very emotionally and spiritually attached to and say, that's not going to serve us well on this part of the journey.
Interesting.
So let's go forward together and see mm-hmm. where God is calling us. So,
and also when you were saying that, you know, that you're adaptive because, you know, God is adaptive. And I feel like that's one of the, I'm more of a not agnostic, not atheist. I'm really like an apathist. Like, I don't know if I really care.
Mm-hmm.
I can still be a good person outside of that. So, but I still see the value since I grew up being a believer in God.
Sure.
And so I think, I like what you said, because to me that says that the Mormon church, the Brighamite clan, they're so rigid and so unchanging that I feel like they are putting restrictions on God. They're not letting God progress the church.
There's a great theologian of old, Karl Barth, who said, let God be God.
Right.
And
don't
I think
take
we have
it
to
over.
Live with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not our role.
Yeah. Right?
No matter how self-important we become mm-hmm. or how much we think we have it all figured out, we don't. Because God is an infinite whatever we want to consider God. So in Community of Christ, we would try to use non-gendered language for God, because there's mm-hmm. there's no sense of saying that God is male or God is gender of any kind. God is what God is. And all we can do is try to tap in the best we can to understand from our own lens at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a kid, God was a big, angry, white guy with a beard. And as I grew older, I realized God was not that at all. God might even be the feminine kind of understanding of compassion and grace and love in the world. And is that compatible with my belief? Yes, most definitely. And mm-hmm. there was a period of time in between there growing up, I thought God was kind of like Kirk on Star Trek, because they could like beam people up and do all that stuff. And so my image of God kind of got, you know, mm-hmm. enmeshed with that a little bit, but I think that's probably most of that gone now.
I love that. And I love what I feel like you're saying, and maybe you can confirm this, but what I feel like you're saying is that in the Community of Christ, God can be whatever you need it to be.
So we understand God as creator,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh.
God as that divine, however we understand divine in our own
individually.
Life. But as a community, mm-hmm. we understand God as the source of all. So
okay.
we are Trinitarian.
Mm-hmm.
So it's God, Jesus, Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. Some would say creator, sustainer, and comforter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that idea that God dwells in community.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Community of Christ, we resonate with that, that somehow God, the eternal that we cannot define in any way. It's like the Tao in Taoism, right? It's
okay.
the way that cannot be named.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of, for me, how I see God, the God that cannot be named. Jesus is the physical manifestation of what we would call divine, living a human life.
So you believe in Christ coming down to earth and in the Bible and things like that?
Yes.
Okay.
So I am Orthodox in that sense.
Yeah.
Now, do I believe in some of the Christology that developed around that? Personally, I'm more of a Nazarene, and by that I mean I'm more with James and Peter that were kind of like, listen, the whole Christ belief, cosmic stuff, mm-hmm. that doesn't work for me as well as understanding Jesus as this person who crossed boundaries and borders and cared about refugees and cared about women who were ostracized and treated as chattel, cared about children who are trying to come and be blessed. Jesus was, I'm more about the ministry and message that I read about Jesus in the New Testament. The rest of it, I don't resonate with that as much. Yeah. It's beyond my finite understanding. And so, yeah.
Thank you. That was beautiful.
Thanks.
I love that. And I
got a little teary there at the end. Yeah.
And I love how you brought out all of the things in the story of Christ that are so timeless and important and show that true compassion. Thank you for itemizing all those things.
Yeah, to me, Jesus is all about justice. Jesus is about turning things over and saying, let's look at it from another perspective.
And he's humble.
Yeah.
I love
very
that.
Much so. Yeah, and you know, he hung around with women, so come on. It was pretty smart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, this is not going like any of my other interviews ever go.
Well, heck, I didn't know that you were a proclaimer of Community of Christ as a viable alternative for people seeking a spiritual home, but thank you.
Well, I mean, it's just...
In the restaurant, no less.
It's natural. Yeah. I mean, she was definitely not looking. She was this young Mormon who... Yeah. She was a return missionary. Even.
Oh, yes. So. Yes. Let's see, a TBM. I've learned all this lingo.
That's it. She definitely was, but I gave her my Mormon happy hour card
anyway. Good for you. Good for you.
I'm like, you probably won't be interested, but in case you are, there you go.
Yeah, excellent. Good. Well, I've thought about you a lot since I met you in Phoenix.
Well, thank you.
So I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad I stopped by to say hi.
Well, I think that exhausts all. Yeah. I'm sure I'll have more questions
later.
Thanks
for having me, but we'll do lunch, and it'll be fine.
Sounds
and, you know, your spouse can come if he wants to, but if not, we'll just talk about him behind his back.
Ooh.
Yeah, it'll be fine. So thanks for having me on Mormon Happy Hour. I appreciate it.
Thanks for stopping by.
Okay.
That wraps up today's topics. We are so glad you stopped by. Be sure to join the Mormon Happy Hour on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon. If you smiled, please drop us a 5-star review wherever you found us. See you next week. Cheers!
Oh, well, thank you.
We're okay with that.
I am. I
you're
like
spiritual.
To be. Yeah. But I just, after.
Uh-oh. Just so that's the pastor of the Salt Lake congregation.
No. Urge to refrain.
Yes. Yeah, I know. So we have a policy on
that. I already offered her and she said no.
I refrained. So we have a policy in Community of Christ. Mm-hmm. It used to be that members and priesthood members must abstain from the use of alcohol. And now.
Are you recording? Okay.
And now the policy reads, urge to refrain from the use of alcohol. And so there's a lot of questions on what's the difference between must abstain and urged to refrain. And the way that I can best describe it is that it was a policy before, which you are required to follow. All priesthood members.
Which could be anyone.
Aaronic priesthood members.
Men or women.
Okay. And encouraged for members. But we tend to look at complicated subjects now from the viewpoint of what are the principles that we uphold. And we uphold healthy relationships, sacredness of creation, which includes mind, body, spirit. Mm-hmm. And we are committed to protecting the most vulnerable. So when we're talking about intoxicants, who are the most vulnerable? Well, it would be children who haven't had a chance to form opinions. That would be families and spouses of alcoholics. It would be people in recovery. Those are the most vulnerable. So if I'm out publicly sharing in your
my sacrament,
what you have to offer here today, then, and there were people here in those situations, right? What does that say to them? It says, oh, well, if she can handle it, I can handle it.
Okay, so it's an example thing.
It's an example thing. And also, but it comes from the perspective of principles. These are the principles that are important to us. Mm-hmm. And within that framework, one of them is to make responsible choices. Mm-hmm. And so you determine what those responsible choices are for you. Having looked at all of where the church encourages you to refrain, it's still up to you to make the responsible choice that's right for you.
I love that. See, I was talking to someone else today about this very thing, about the community of Christ and alcohol. I'm such a missionary for you.
You are.
And I was explaining to them, because they're like, oh, do they drink? And I'm like, well, actually, they don't prohibit it, but they highly encourage against it, or at least
urged to refrain. That's the phrase.
Right. Yeah. Which I was explaining as, like, be responsible.
Yeah.
You know, and always, you know, and be aware of
your
surroundings.
Protect the most vulnerable.
I love that.
Always protect the most vulnerable.
I love that.
Yeah. Again, it's a justice issue.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Well, thank you. For
real. Well, Blair, our pastor from the Salt Lake congregation, was taking pictures of your set out here, so you caught his attention.
Well, tell him don't be scared.
I won't.
Thank you again.
Thank you.